Bednarik.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Ms. Altman. My name is Jonas Bednarik, and I represent Terrence McCauley on this direct appeal subsequent to guilty pleas on two substantive drug counts in the trial court. I've raised two issues in this appeal. First, that a motion to suppress evidence was improperly denied when the trial court determined that probable cause pre-existed a pat-down search of Mr. McCauley, which revealed drugs that led to the basis of one of the counts in the indictment. And secondly, that the district court erred when it chose to apply a sentencing guideline enhancement for possession of a dangerous weapon during the commission of a drug crime. I'm, of course, requesting that it be reversed and remanded to the trial court. I frankly believe that the probable cause issue that I've raised is, in my humble opinion, intensely fact-specific. And frankly, I think that the briefs that you all have addressed those facts. And we all know that probable cause determinations are, you know, these totality arguments which certainly revolve around a factual analysis. So I don't think it be particularly appropriate for me to orally argue today all of these facts that you have access to and which I think are, quite frankly, properly ferreted out in the briefing. I'm certainly stand ready to answer any questions about that issue, but really what I wanted to do this morning is focus on the guideline weapon enhancement issue a little bit more, because I think that one, frankly, bears a better example for oral argument than does the probable cause issue. The sentencing hearing in this case involved Mr. McCauley calling to testify a Micah Richardson. Micah Richardson was an individual who, by all accounts, had accosted a David Neely with a baseball bat during a altercation over what is most probably a drug debt. It is this Mr. Richardson who knocked Mr. Neely with the bat several times. Law enforcement became involved when several hours later they received a report from the hospital that an individual had been assaulted with this baseball bat. Law enforcement responds to the hospital, interviews Mr. Neely, and Mr. Neely indicates that this Mr. Richardson had hit him with the baseball bat, and there was a second or third, if you will, individual that held him from behind when this assault occurred. He described this individual in only very vague terms, short, black male, about 5 feet to 5 feet 4 inches tall. The facts that Mr. Neely provided to the officer, however, were far more specific with respect to Mr. Richardson, in that he identified Mr. Richardson by a general location, although he didn't know the exact address. He knew where he sort of lived, described how to get there to the detective, and indicated most notably that Mr. Richardson was wearing an ankle bracelet, an electronic monitoring device. So armed with that information, off the officer goes to this area. And it also should be noted that the officer responded, I think, about 7 hours after the initial assault had occurred. He knocks on the door, and out comes, the door was answered initially and then closed. And so he and his colleagues sort of stake the residence out when sometime later my client, Mr. McCauley, exits the residence. The officer at that point places Mr. McCauley into handcuffs and does this pat-down search, which led to the probable cause issue. Based upon that information, the guilty plea was entered, and Mr. Richardson then testifies at this sentencing hearing before Judge Crabb, and he testifies to the court that my client, Mr. McCauley, was not involved in this baseball bat incident on the assault of Mr. Neely. This is a proposition that was supported by the pre-sentence investigation report and something that the government then objected to. So after hearing the evidence, Judge Crabb determined that indeed Mr. McCauley was perhaps involved, or at least by a preponderance was involved in this assault, thereby applying the guideline enhancement for possession of a dangerous weapon. This had great import on the case in that he was not safety valve eligible at that point and was subject to a 5-year mandatory minimum sentence, which brings us here today. One of the main points that I wanted to make this morning was, I think it's arguable, clearly, in my opinion, whether or not Mr. McCauley a preponderance of evidence was shown that Mr. McCauley was the individual that held Mr. Neely. But even if we assume, for the sake of argument, that he was, or that there was a preponderance, what I don't think has been demonstrated, and what I think has frankly been glossed over in the government's reply in their briefing, is that the nexus between this assault of Mr. Neely and the substantive crime for which Mr. McCauley was charged and convicted of, they're not connected. There was certainly not close proximity in time. There was about 7 hours that elapsed. There, Mr. Richardson, who, of course, did the beating, he was charged and convicted for possession, I believe possession with intent to distribute. I don't believe that the cocaine base that was found on my client and Mr. McCauley sometime later was ever attributed to Mr. Richardson as relevant conduct. I don't believe that there was any sort of nexus drawn between Mr. Richardson selling this cocaine base that my client had some 7 hours later. I don't believe the government ever demonstrated a link. So even if we believe that my client potentially was an accomplice to this battery of Mr. Neely, I don't know as though we can take the next step to say that that constructive possession of that baseball bat, that dangerous weapon, was necessarily linked to the offense of conviction for which he was convicted of, which was the possession of the cocaine base sometime later. That was something that I talked about in my brief, and I quite frankly don't feel like the government responded to that very well. And I think that that's important because we all know that there has to be a connection between the dangerous weapon and the count of conviction. And I very much believe that that doesn't exist in this case. Again, that is somewhat fact-specific, but I also am concerned, and I expressed this in my briefing as well, that the government made no effort to do that at the sentencing hearing. So Mr. McCauley calls Mr. Richardson, and he testifies Mr. McCauley wasn't involved. In response to that, the government didn't offer. They simply proffered that, well, he was picked out of a lineup and we're not going to offer any witnesses. So really, I was concerned, and I expressed this to the trial court, I was concerned that we weren't hearing from Mr. Neely himself. He frankly was in the best position to provide the information to the trial court. But apart from that, like I say, I am also concerned that they haven't drawn this connection between this baseball bat and the assault itself, and the offense of conviction, which is the possession of cocaine base sometime later. That's essentially what I have for you all this morning. I'm not touching a great deal on the probable cause issue again because I think it's fact specific. Unless the court has any questions, I'll defer to my colleague.
Well, just to clarify, in other words, you're saying that to the extent the district judge found that there was a weapon used in connection with a drug transaction, the only transaction would not have been the one to which Mr. McCauley pleaded guilty.
Correct. I think it clearly, and you should know, and I think this is in the briefing too, that Mr. Richardson was given the dangerous weapon enhancement in his sentence. Okay, so clearly the interaction between Mr. Richardson and Mr. Neely was believed to be over a drug debt. In fact, he testified to that at the sentencing hearing. So clearly that one has that nexus. But Mr. McCauley is somewhere else. You know, 7 hours later, he's picked up with this cocaine base, and it's not in the record at all that it was Mr. Richardson that sold Mr. McCauley that cocaine base or that they had a drug relationship between themselves. I think if that were in the record and that were to be true, then clearly the enhancement has more applicability. But without that, I think it doesn't. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Altman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the United States in this case. I will follow Mr. Bednarik's lead, and I'll leave the Court to address the probable cause issue. Suffice it to say, the government certainly believes that Detective Wiese had probable cause to arrest the defendant at the time he conducted the pat-down search of him, based on all the information that Detective Wiese had from the scene and from contact with the victim. Should the court find otherwise, the government also believes that the search was appropriate based on a Terry stop. And again, our brief goes into that. With regard to the dangerous weapon enhancement, I just went through the defendant's brief again, and certainly there's the possibility that I missed it, but the main gist of the argument below, and I believe in the brief, was that the defendant wasn't there, and he wasn't involved in this beating. I don't think it was ever raised in district court, and I don't believe it's raised in the brief, that this was not connected to his offense until the reply brief. That's the first time I recall seeing it and getting ready to address an argument on that particular issue. With regard to the enhancement itself, in addition to the evidence that Detective Wiese had that led him to arrest the defendant, the court did have information that Mr. McCulley was involved in the beating, and that is that the victim picked him out of a lineup several days later and said with 100% certainty, that is who held me down while Mr. McCulley beat me. And yes, he was able to give a better description of Mr. McCulley. That's because, or I'm sorry, Mr. Richardson, who was actually doing the beating, McCulley was behind him and was holding him down. So it would make sense that he would have less of a view of the person who's behind him.
So this disconnect argument he's making, do you want to address that?
With regard to the offense? Sure. There's a beating at a house, and several hours later, the defendant is arrested with drugs in his pocket, a large amount of drugs. The testimony from Mr. Richardson, well, incredible on most parts, was that he had sold Mr. McCulley drugs in the past and had sold drugs to him that night. They had used drugs together. The idea that a baseball bat that was used in a beating, that a beating occurred several hours earlier in a house where there's drug transactions going on, participated in by a person with an ounce of crack cocaine in his pocket, it's not clearly improbable that those two things are connected.
The beating, I mean, one reasonable, it sounds as though Mr. Bednarik's on the same page here. It's reasonable to conclude that Neely was beat up over some kind of a drug deal gone bad.
Correct.
And Richardson was involved in that, and so was McCulley, and they had to beat him up because he didn't pay or he hadn't paid enough or whatever it might have been. The argument that's now being made, and I think you're right that it doesn't show up until the reply brief, is that while that may have been a basis for enhancing the sentence of Mr. Neely had the charges been relating to McCulley, had the charges been related to that assault. It's not appropriate here because the charge is not directly related to the assault. It's instead related to the fact that he was carrying around distribution quantities of cocaine base several hours later.
Correct.
Could have obtained them later, potentially, could have purchased them later, could have purchased them from Mr. Richardson or from somebody else in a deal that has nothing to do with the assault.
Well, all of those are possible, Your Honor. I would certainly agree. And had the defendant raised that earlier, perhaps we could have addressed them. That's one of the reasons. First of all, it's the government's position that this argument is waived because it was raised for the first time in his reply brief and didn't give us an opportunity to respond to it. The connection between the bat and the drugs has been made, and now it's up to him to say that it's clearly improbable that they were not connected. And he can't do that because, like, it could be this, it could be that. All of these things weren't addressed based on the fact that it wasn't raised until later. The initial burden has been met because they were involved in the same sort of series of transactions, and now it's his turn to show why it's clearly improbable. And it's the government's position. He can't do that based on the record that's before it today. If the court doesn't have any other questions, I would simply ask this court to affirm both of the district court's rulings with regard to probable cause and the enhancement, and ask that the court affirm the defendant's sentence and conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Bednarik?
Thank you. Yes, very, very briefly. I'm frankly a little bit concerned that the government has alluded that we haven't previously raised this argument. Looking at page 27 of my opening brief, where I make this statement, moreover, no link has been established that appellant had any dealings with Mr. Richardson. Hence, even if we assume appellant did possess the bat, it has not been proven that it was possessed during the course on the offense of conviction. This is an argument that I did raise, and this is a
well, was that raised in the district court?
Yeah. One
that
half
argument?
Of a sentence is not an argument.
Yeah. And was that raised in the district court, the connection? Did you raise that?
My thrust in the posture of this case is as follows. The pre-sentence investigation did not recommend this enhancement. I opted to have Mr. Richardson brought in for testimony. He's in custody. I had him brought to Wisconsin to the Western District for testimony in an effort to support what the pre-sentence was saying. So I think properly to answer your question is no, I didn't ferret this out a great deal on the record because my thrust remains that he wasn't involved in the beating itself. But even if we presume he was, there's no nexus. So I see my time is up.
Which page did you say, 26?
27 of my opening brief. And it would be in...
Here's the way I read that. No link has been established that appellant had any dealings with Mr. Richardson. I understood that to relate directly to your argument that it was not Mr. McCauley who was involved in the assault.
And that remained my...
As opposed to, it was not Mr. McCauley... There was no indication that Mr. McCauley had dealings with Mr. Richardson vis-a-vis the crack cocaine in his pants.
Correct. That my main argument is and remains that there hasn't been proof to a preponderance that Mr. McCauley was involved in the assault. I mean, Mr. Richardson testified he was not. The pre-sentence indicated there's not a preponderance to say that he was. So that clearly remained my argument and remains today. But even if we believe that he was, the fallback position is that there hasn't been this nexus. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. And Mr. Bednarik, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.